Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hello and welcome to the Autosport Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas. Formula One's 2021 launch season picked up major momentum today, with two more teams revealing their challenges for the coming season, the Mercedes W12 and the Alpine A521. On this episode of the podcast, I'm joined by Motorsport.com's F1 editor Jonathan Noble, Autosport's F1 reporter Luke Smith, and our technical editor Jake Boxall-Legg to go over what we learned from the Mercedes and Alpine launches today. So, let's start with the reigning champion squad. Jake, what's different about the kind of new, kind of not new Mercedes W12?
No, there's not a massive amount on it that's entirely new, but they were quite upfront with that, which I'll explain in a minute. There were some new details to the overall bargeboard package. Last year, they played around with the specification quite a lot last year. They came up with one package, and then for the Belgian Grand Prix, they shifted it back a little bit. And at the time, it looked like it was more of a specification for perhaps low downforce circuits, but it's something they continued with through the rest of the season. But it seems that they've sort of gone forward with it again. And I wonder if that's a legacy of these floor changes as well. It seems to be a lot of teams are trying to work air a lot earlier so that, you know, the floor, because it has less tools with which to do the job, they're trying to get that outwash, if you like, done earlier to ensure the diffuser's nice and clean and works as it should. So there's that, and there's a few changes to the side pods and bodywork as well. As you'll have probably noticed from the launch images, there's quite a big bulge on the side of the car, and that is a legacy of the new powertrain package, which I'll go into a minute as well. But it just looks like they've tightened everything up, and obviously we know that W11 was possibly F1's fastest car, contender for perhaps F1's greatest car, considering its dominance. And this is just aiming to not eclipse that per se, but, you know, be every little bit its equal.
Well, Mercedes technical director James Allison was part of their virtual launch at their Brackley race bays today, and he actually said that, came out outright said it, Mercedes are hiding things, Jake. So what is he referring to there when he says that?
Well, first of all, it's nice that someone's honest about hiding things on a launch car. We don't get that a lot, I guess. But he's talking about the floor, of course. As I've mentioned before, for 2021, there's these brand new floor regulations where a big triangular cutout has been taken from the floor. And so the teams have a lot less to work with getting that underbody downforce. And Mercedes is not prepared to reveal its hand just yet, because, you know, as we know, Mercedes is a team that's always been fantastic at developing solutions for any given challenge, really, with regards to the rules. And so I think they know that they've got a good idea for it, and they don't want teams to copy it. James Allison said that it buys them a couple more weeks before teams start looking at their design and perhaps trying to slot it in the wind tunnel. So quite a smart move from them.
And what about the Mercedes powertrain? You mentioned the engine earlier on, Jake. I mean, it's always quite a big topic. Teams are only allowed to make one major change this year. We know Ferrari going to be a lot of attention paid to what it can do with its latest engine after its troubles last year. Honda, of course, aiming to head off into the sunset on a high with Red Bull. But what about Mercedes? We know that they did encounter some early problems in testing, saved really by the extra time the pandemic afforded them. So what were the team sort of hinting at in regards to that situation today?
We don't know the scope of the internals, but they say they've got some very, very innovative solution. Words of new engine chief Hal Thomas, who has come in and replaced Andy Cowell, who has left the team. There are a few slight changes to the engine regulations in that they're going to be 5 kilograms heavier because on cost reasons, F1 wants to eliminate some exotic materials. So there's got to be a few changes with that regard. But yeah, they're very, very bullish about that new engine. I know they've said that they're perhaps encountering a few issues here and there, but James Allison said, you know, the new unit's got more horsepower than the old one. And, you know, it should be, you know, Mercedes have created excellent powertrains every single year in the hybrid era. So there's no reason to suggest that this won't be another one.
Well, Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas and Toto Wolff faced the media in a string of Zoom calls after the virtual launch took place. John, Luke, what did we learn from those? Let's start with Lewis Hamilton, John. Did we learn anything more about his future? About, you know, are we any closer to knowing how things are going to pan out for Lewis Hamilton post-2021 and his current one-year deal?
Yeah, I think we got a slight step forward in what kind of we understand about their contract. That, you know, Toto had said over the winter that the delay in sorting it, thanks to COVID, the late finish of the season, meant that there wasn't time to sort out a long-term deal. But Lewis said today it was his choice to do a one-year deal. Doesn't see the need, you know, in a time when the world's changed quite a bit, doesn't see the need for a long-term deal. So it seems it was something Lewis wanted. It seems it's something Lewis is quite happy with. It seems if Lewis wants to carry on, it'll probably be another one-year deal and a one-year deal after that. And it kind of leaves Mercedes in an interesting spot because you see Ferrari committing long-term to Charles Leclerc. You see Red Bull committing long-term to Max Verstappen. So, you know, the top teams commit themselves around a big superstar for the long-term. Mercedes hasn't got that luxury. Lewis is out of contract at the end of this year. Valtteri's out of contract at the end of this year. So, you know, it's almost incredible that the potentially best car on the grid has two vacancies for 2022, and you can bet that Toto, you know, cannot afford to sit back and, you know, be confident that both drivers would be there for the long-term future. Get to September, October, and suddenly Lewis says, oh no, I've had enough, I'm going, and everyone else is locked up. So it's gonna be fascinating to see where the movement goes. Toto says they won't flirt with other drivers before they've spoken to Lewis and Valtteri, but I bet that won't stop other drivers flirting with Toto.
Certainly not. And indeed, he was also saying that, you know, because of the success and the relationship they have with Hamilton have had so over so many years, he'll be the first call. You know, they won't sort of, he'll be the first piece of the jigsaw that they've got to solve this year. But John, also, what was Hamilton saying about his goals in the next step of his important quest, his important aim to improve the lack of diversity in motorsport?
He actually said that was part of his wider kind of, not ambition in life, but, you know, one of his core goals now is to do more with he's got his foundation, he's got, you know, that the charity he set up with Mercedes as well, that's moving forward. So I think he's seeing as much satisfaction off track as potentially on it, but he's still a man very much driven by Formula One. He was quite clear today that, you know, his future does not rest on winning the 8th title and walking away and not winning it and staying. There's a myriad of factors in there, but you do get the first sense from him that he's starting to look a bit more about what life is like after Formula One, that his entire life is no longer dictated by what happens at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. There are much bigger things at play now.
As I said, Valtteri Bottas also facing the media today. Luke, you and I were on that Zoom call with him, and I wanted to get your sense of what you made of Valtteri Bottas today, because I thought he was in quite a cheery, upbeat mood. I don't know whether that was just because come the end of last season, having had another title defeat in what was a very demanding year, considering the pandemic, considering how quickly and how sort of, you know, constant the run of races were last year. It was very difficult for everybody involved in Formula One. But he seemed rather upbeat today. He sat down, gave a very cheerful salute to the media, which I'm sure we all appreciated. But it was just interesting. It was just interesting hearing him and seeing him at this time of year. So, did we pick up any clues into how he might be going ahead of the 2021 season?
Well, yeah, he's in a really good place by the sounds of things. He used the word perfect to describe how his winter was, and he said that he was able to spend a lot of time away. He said he did some quite extreme training, he called it. He wanted to channel the Finnish sisu, that Finnish mentality that is so hard for anyone who's from anyone anywhere else to crack, really. And yeah, he said that he's worked hard and that he spent a lot of time over the winter working on his mental state. And he said that basically he wanted to try and make it so he was more consistent across the course of a season, this never-ending quest, it seems like, to defeat Lewis Hamilton in a title fight. And he's I'm sure he's very bored of all the headlines that the likes of the four of us come up with about a Bottas version 3.0 or 4.0 or whatever. And he just said, I just need to be more consistent. He said, I just need to work on the sort of mental side of things to unlock that sort of extra bit of performance that I perhaps been lacking at points this year. And he spoke quite openly about it. And I asked him, I said, are you working with a mind coach or anything? Because we know it's something that Lando Norris has done very effectively. A lot of elite athletes do it. And that was the only point where he sort of clammed up during the whole media session. And he said, well, I don't really want to talk about it. And it's not something I really want to share sort of techniques or anything like that. The man he's got to face about any shortcomings he's had against Lewis Hamilton is the man in the mirror. And he said he doesn't want to be looking back on anything that's happened in the past, that he's very much focused on this season. He's still very confident that he can defeat Lewis Hamilton in a title fight. And he said that he's really raring to go for the new campaign. So yeah, there was definitely a spring in his step. I think just following his Instagram read over the winter, you can see he's had quite a nice break, sort of split between Finland and Monaco, and doing a lot of cycling by the looks of things. And he seems to be in a really good place, which is good. But then again, we've said this, I think, for the last 3 or 4 years, that every year, oh, we're going to get Bottas, he's going to come back stronger, come back better. And again, you just got to wonder, is it actually going to be enough to defeat Lewis Hamilton across the course of a championship fight?
Just for the record, you'll never get me running or suggesting a headline involving Valtteri Bottas 2. Whatever. I just think it's been done to death. But there we go. Let's go on to the most visible and potentially contentious element of every team launch, and that's what their livery's going to be for the coming year. Mercedes largely keeps the same livery in terms of the all black base, but they have had really sort of tweaked the rear end of it. From my point of view, I don't like it as much as I did last year. I think they've got a lot going on, perhaps too much going on now. You've got trying to sort of squeeze in the corporate colours of three companies and Petronas, Ineos, Mercedes itself, bringing back that sort of Silver Arrows heritage. Whereas, I don't know, it just seemed simpler last year, where it had the livery it did, and obviously, you know, highlighting such an important message, which is to try and improve the lack of diversity in motorsport. So, Jake, you're a man of you know, excellent taste. What did you think of the Mercedes livery?
I agree with you. There's too many colours on it, I think. I think when you're coming up with a livery design, you kind of really want to stick to three at maximum. Otherwise, it gets a little bit too 1990 Benetton. You want to keep it simple, and I think the simpler the better. And there's too many conflicting ideas. Obviously, I appreciate they do have commercial considerations. They've got the Petronas teal to fit in. They've got Ineos's sort of ready sort of burgundy kind of color to fit in. Obviously they want to keep black for their diversity message and for their for foundations that they're creating as well. But also there's the silver for Mercedes as well, and this big splash of AMG logos at the rear half as well. It just doesn't do any favors. It doesn't mesh together. It's like two different liveries on one canvas. So yeah, it could do with some work, in my opinion. But, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
It certainly is. And I mean, our talent is with words, apparently, rather than colours and images. John, what do you think of the Mercedes livery for 2021?
Yeah, I think I agree with both of you. I think when you looked, you got like these teaser images over the last few days. So when it closed in on small elements of the car, it looked quite nice. The Ineos branding on the roll hoop, and then this morning was the AMG logos look quite good close up. But I think when it comes together as an entire package, I think it doesn't quite sit as well as you know, many iconic liveries have in the past. I always think I kind of agree with Jake that, you know, a car livery should be simple, and, you know, a child should be able to draw that livery on the back of a notepad, and we know what that Formula One car is. We can all you know, draw what the McLarens were like in the 80s. We can, you know what Jordan was like in 1991. But I'm not sure, you know, by the end of this year, anyone's going to be very easily able to draw what a Mercedes W12 looks like.
Leek?
No, I'll give it a thumbs up, I think. I think I'm going to go the other way to you guys. I think it's, yeah, actually a pretty nice design. I thought it was really futuristic. I think the way they've kept the sort of Petronas luminous green, I thought was really, really cool. And I actually quite like sort of the fade effect towards the back. And okay, maybe a few too many AMG logos, but the way it sort of fades into the silver, I think is quite nice. I really like the numbering as well, just like the big 44 and 77 that you've got on the back of the car as well. I just think it's a really futuristic livery. And I think that the shots that Mercedes released towards the end of the day of the physical car in the race bay, that did a lot more for me than the initial renders. So I'm a fan of this. I think that it's maybe a little bit too much going on, but actually I think that's quite cool. It's quite futuristic, and I think it's, yeah, for me, up there as one of the better liveries that we've seen in this launch season. But I think the team we're going to come onto in a little bit has probably stolen the show on that front.
Those race bay shots they had, I think they had a undercar light underneath it just to kind of accentuate some of the colours. So maybe if they keep that light on the car for the races this year, maybe we can give them a big thumbs up.
Well, they were talking about having taken DAS off the car, they've got a little bit of spare weight to sort of play with. So maybe fitting the light in would help with the distribution of that. I mean, it's the eternal problem with Formula One fans, as we are, in terms of liveries. Everyone wants it to be different. And then when it's different, it's like, oh, why is it different? But there we go. Anyway, moving on to the next part of our discussion, we've again asked our social media followers to vote on how they see the 2021 season playing out for Mercedes. And here are the results on that, to a series of set questions. And obviously, I'll ask you guys for your opinion as well. In terms of which driver scores more points, it's fairly comprehensive, as I'm sure you'd imagine. Victory for one of the Mercedes drivers, given his very successful history. On Instagram, 91% think Lewis Hamilton has scored more points, and just 9% for Valtteri Bottas. Twitter is even more comprehensive, 95% for Hamilton and 5% for Bottas. So effectively, Luke, I'm coming to you, pick to you, sorry. Is Hamilton the favourite of the two Mercedes drivers to do better in 2021?
Completely. Yeah, I think it's probably, out of all the teammate partnerships on the grid, I think it's the one that's probably the safest bet that Lewis Hamilton is gonna win that. I think he's only twice lost in his career across the course of a season to a teammate, Jenson Button in 2011 and Nico Rosberg in 2016. So it takes a lot to beat Lewis Hamilton. It takes a lot of bad luck for Lewis Hamilton to get in the way as well. And I think that no matter how much Bottas may have improved himself or be working on his mental state or anything like that, to defeat the driver who statistically is the greatest of all time, it's going to take something monumental. So I think if anything, that 95%, I think I may be a little bit even a little bit too generous perhaps to Valtteri Bottas.
Wow. Well, next question was, will Mercedes take an eighth consecutive constructors title this season? On Instagram, 86% of people said yes and just 14% no, whereas Twitter, again, more comprehensive, 93% saying yes and just 7% saying no. So John, effectively the question is Mercedes once again the favorite heading into 2021?
Yeah, absolutely the favorite. I mean, I can't see, I think the only team that could potentially challenge them for race wins regularly is Red Bull, and I don't see enough change in the regulations and kind of step forward from Honda on the engine front against what progress Mercedes has made. And on the chassis front, you've got, you know, Mercedes are, you know, up there as Red Bull were once kind of aero kings, but I think that's no longer the case because Mercedes are just as good on that front. So yeah, clear favourites, but doesn't necessarily mean that they could hit reliability problems or a patch of bad luck. So it's not guaranteed. I wouldn't, you know, bet my house on it, but you know, it's an easy 10 quid, isn't it, that it's going to happen.
Bet somebody else's house, if such things are allowed.
I'll bet your new house.
It's not big enough. There we go. The next question was, will Mercedes score more or less victories this year than in 2020? And it's an interesting one, this, because the team arguably should have scored at least two more last season, only really defeated on merit twice against Red Bull at Silverstone and Abu Dhabi. And I think it effectively gave away two victories at Monza and in the Sakhir Grand Prix as well. But now, here are the results from our followers. On Instagram, 41% say more and 59% say less, whereas Twitter, it's 39% saying more than in 2020 and 61% saying less. So, Jake, what do you think? Do you think Mercedes will do better or worse this year in terms of race victories?
Well, the calendar's longer, isn't it? So I'm going to say more.
At the moment, it's longer.
At the moment. Yeah, okay.
Could be shorter.
It could end up being short. In that case, I'll say the same. What was it? 13 out of 17? Oh, no, 13 seems a bit low to me. I'm going to say, yeah, more. Let's go more.
Cool. Well, that was nice and clear from you there, Jake. The next question was, the Hamilton-Bottas partnership, is it made in heaven or hell? On Instagram, we've got 62% voting for heaven and just 38% voting for hell. And on Twitter, slight difference, 68% voting for heaven and 32% voting for hell. Luke, do you agree with that? Do you think it's basically an ideal partnership Mercedes have got in its driver lineup?
Completely. I don't know who's voting for hell on that front, because there's never been a bad word between the two of them. I think even today, Bottas was sort of talking about being a bit more demanding, maybe a bit more selfish sort of with his team. But I mean, between him and Lewis Hamilton, it's been, I think, the perfect partnership, really. I think that Lewis has been able to do all that he wants to do, and he's been very successful. And yeah, at no point has he ever like lost a race or anything like that because of Valtteri Bottas not being there for him, which is something that obviously Max Verstappen has struggled with in the past couple of years. But he's I think it's a great partnership. I think that's probably the big consideration for Mercedes moving forward, is do they want to sort of upset the apple cart and change anything within this really, really strong partnership between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. So I think it's probably out of the whole grid, I would say it's probably the most heavenly of inter-team partnerships, perhaps.
Indeed. Well, the last question was, will Lewis Hamilton take title number 8 this season? On Instagram, we've got 81% of people saying yes and just 19% saying no. Again, a little bit more emphatic on Twitter. It's 84% saying yes and just 16% saying no. So, I mean, we've already sort of covered who's the favourite, who's going to get more points. But John, what was Lewis sort of saying about the potential to win an 8th world title? Because it's interesting there, with only signing a 1-year deal, there's a theory that if he wins this one, takes the record from himself, from Michael Schumacher, he might walk off into the sunset. So what was he sort of saying about the potential to win an 8th world title today?
Still quite coy in terms of making any bold declarations. And Mercedes is, you know, a foundation of its success is not getting complacent, not believing that just because it's won the previous year's title, it's going into this season expecting the same. So they've always downplayed things pre-season. It's no different this time around. And I think for Mercedes, that the paranoia, you know, one day will be justified, because at some point they are going to trip up. Mercedes cannot win in Formula One forever. So whether it's this year, whether it's 22, whether it's 25, whether it's 2030, at some point this run of domination is going to end. Someone else is going to come out on top. Mercedes is going to stumble, and then it'll be a fascinating dynamic to see, you know, how the team recovers and gets itself kind of back on the top.
Well, moving on to the next part of our discussion, and that is moving teams entirely. We're going to be talking about Alpine, the rebranded Renault team, obviously, had their launch today. Bit of a confession, first of all, I was working on a column for Autosport.com Plus, which I'm sure you can read now. It's supposed to go up this evening. So I didn't see any of the virtual launch, Luke. So how did it go? How did it compare with Mercedes?
It was an experience, let's say that. I got a message from one of, because we ran an article this morning dubbing today Super Tuesday because of the launches going on, and I had a member of the Alpine PR team messaged me going, oh, prepare to be amazed, like, live up to it. And yeah, it was something. It was they said it would be a virtual event, so I was like, okay, well, that means they're going to do it on Zoom or something like that, as is everything that we're doing nowadays. But actually, no, it meant that they had the host, Lee McKenzie, they had Esteban Ocon, Martin Kowski, Davide Brivio, and Lauren Rossi, all in front of these sort of like green screens, basically. And then when they're all introduced, they kind of basically flip around this virtual car, and it was all very interesting. And our colleague at GP Racing, Stuart Codling, was saying he didn't know which characters to select, as though it was a video game or something like that. So it was very entertaining on that front. Slightly frustrating in terms of connection issues and things like that. And at one point, Davide Brivio had to drop out twice of the media call and then return with no video or anything because it was not working. He was in Dubai for some reason. And so it's it was a bit of an odd one. I think Mercedes had a better launch, in all honesty. No offense, Alpine, but Alpine have got a prettier car, so swings and roundabouts.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, with the Alpine launch, perhaps too much virtual, not enough reality, whatever that might mean. But yeah, I think the new livery, absolutely stunning. John, what was your reaction to seeing a car that for so long has been yellow and black? Now a nice light sort of electric blue and black.
Yeah, I like the blue they've chosen. I remember us discussing when people got furious at the interim livery that came in, saying, oh, they've wasted this opportunity. This is terrible. Why have they not done more? Blah, blah, blah. Even though it was an interim livery and wasn't the final thing. So I don't think you can be disappointed. It's moved on a lot from when we first caught a glimpse of the proposed livery back in September last year, when they showed us at Monza what it could be like. I think it looks good, it looks different, it stands out. And, you know, I'll go back to my kind of comparison about good liveries. I think, you know, an Alpine fan, a Fernando Alonso fan, should be able to draw that F1 car this season. So it's a winner.
Jake, what did you think? Did it remind you of any particular 1990s cars that I know you're a big fan of?
I hadn't planned for that question, to be honest with you. And obviously, as we know, I'm not as witty in real life as I am after I've had a few hours to think about it. So.
Ever.
No one thinks you're witty.
I'll get back to you on that one. But I do really like the livery. I know I'm contradicting myself a little bit by saying it should be no more than three colours, and obviously there is four, but I think you can make... It's different. And I didn't really like the previous Renault liveries either, because they just seemed disjointed. It was like, again, it was like two different cars just sort of glued together, and there was no real clear direction where the yellow should be and where the black should be. None of them lived up to the 2010 Renault livery, which was amazing. So it's nice to see this change of tack. It does stand out. It does look really, really good. 10 out of 10, really.
Luke, what did you think? I thought the new Alpine livery has a hint of the Renault EDAMS Formula E livery of a few
years
ago.
That's a good point, actually.
That's something that occurred to me. But yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, no, it's the same kind of blue. So it's I agree. That sort of really does make the livery. And I think you mentioned about sort of 90s F1 cars. I think there were Prost was sort of the comparison that was floating around social media after the launch. And yeah, I just think it's great. And I think that the important thing is for teams to have basically a set identity in terms of that be their colour. And I think obviously Ferrari is always red. I think McLaren regained it when they went back to their papaya orange. Racing Point had that so famously with the pink cars, and now Aston Martin will have it by being green. And I think that we're sort of looking at the grid for this year, and with the for the live timing screens and the TV graphics, each team has its own colour. And recently it was sort of floating around what the colours were, and I think Mercedes, Alpine, AlphaTauri and Red Bull were all quite similar shades of blue, so that the pedants out there were moaning a little bit. But I think that the design that Alpine have gone with, I think that is, you're going to look at that car and go, okay, that's an Alpine. You'll know what it is. I think it's really cool. They've got the red, white and blue. They said that's about obviously the colours of the French flag, but also the British flag, that sort of reflects the work between Viri and Enstone. And yeah, I just think it's a really, really cool car. So I think it's the prettiest car on the grid we've got. I think it's the best livery, and I don't see anything beating it in the next couple of days. But that's the gauntlet down for Aston Martin tomorrow with their green and a little bit of BWT pink, maybe. So give us a watermelon design, perhaps.
Certainly will. It certainly will. Well, Jake, other than the new livery, is there anything different about the Alpine compared to the Renault based on what we saw today?
I'm glad you asked me that, Alex. Yes, there is.
It's almost as if you told me to write and ask you that question.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like you asked me to tell you what questions to ask me.
Correct.
Now we're just going around in circles. No, it seems like a lot of work has been done to... I think generally the cooling package overall. There isn't a massive change to the powertrain as it stands. There will be a change coming for Bahrain. But it does seem they put a lot of work into that cooling, because the side pods are so much tighter than they were last year. I mean, it wasn't a big car last year at all, but in terms of side pod size, but it's gone even more so with it. Obviously, I don't know if it's just the new paint job or whether this is the situation. It's really, really hard to tell when you're comparing the two side by side, but I think the engine cover's a little bit bigger in comparison. So it seems that they've moved some of the cooling components out of the side pods again and into the sort of space behind the driver's head. I think overall the reason for that is because, again, you've got this floor to explore. You've got fewer tools available on it and you need to create downforce. So open that floor up a little bit more, you can create that pressure difference and you'll get your diffuser working harder. So I think that's the reason why they've gone for it. And obviously packaging goes hand in hand with aerodynamics, powertrain design. Everything is interlinked on these modern Formula One cars. It's not just you stick a shell on it and go. Everything has to be designed together. So that's the key difference on the Alpine. I think there's a lot of maybe a few more changes still to come. A lot of it carried over, but there is some fundamental differences.
Yeah, another excellently written question coming up for you, Jake. I mean, are there any obvious developments that you can see coming for Alpine based on how they've launched everything for 2021 so far?
Well, as I mentioned, they have got a new powertrain update coming. As you mentioned earlier, you do have one in-season update available, and then that is it for the season, and then we get into 2022 and beyond. So that's something key that is coming. I think there'll probably be a few more changes here and there as well. The virtual package does seem strongly rooted in last year's. There were a few fundamental changes again, which I missed. With regards to that main turning vane that's attached to the side pod, that's going to be different. Again, that's going to play differently with the new side pod design. The front wing is still rooted in last year's, and perhaps we'll see a change there. But, you know, if it's working for them, why change it? But you would expect a change to interact with the floor a little bit. There is a change to the cape design as well, which I also forgot about previously. Again, I mentioned trying to do everything earlier, and it seems they come up with this slotted design for the cape, which if you've got photos to hand, it does look very, very intricate. So it's worth checking out just to see what they're doing at the front. It does seem like quite a cool design, quite innovative. So, yeah, there's a few innovations on there.
JBO, you should have written your questions that I had to read out in a way that would spark, you know, things that you to remind you to say.
I should have written my answers is what you're saying.
Definitely. That's on autosport.com plus. You can check that out there already. John, what were the key messages that Alpine was coming out with today? It's a new brand for Formula One. It's a big sort of revitalising moment for the team. Got a new driver, well, a returning driver in Fernando Alonso coming on board, although he wasn't a part of the launch today. So yeah, what was the team saying about itself today?
Yeah, I think the ambitions are very much there for the long term, that they're in this to win it. They're in it to make a big impression. Laurent Rossi, the CEO, talks of a road plan to 2025 of breaking even. The road car sales will be enough to pay for their racing program, and they want to be winning by then. So short term wise, I don't think they're expecting any dramatic turnaround in fortunes. They, obviously clearly targeting podium finishes. I think they see the opportunity of 2022. And see this year as a first step. So no bold declarations of winning races in 21. I think that will very much wait for 2022 and beyond.
And Luke, what did we learn about the team's new management? Obviously, no more Cyril Abiteboul. We've got Davide Brivio, who's come across from Suzuki MotoGP. Yeah, his first chance to sort of meet the public, as it were. So how did the team's new management introduce themselves today?
Well, yeah, Davide Brivio has come across from Suzuki's title-winning MotoGP squad. And I asked him about that move and said, how difficult was it to step away from obviously an environment, a world he knows so much in MotoGP, and come over to Formula One? And he said that it was a really difficult decision because he'd been with Suzuki for such a long time, overseeing their return to MotoGP and then going on to win the championship with Jérôme Mir last year. But he said that it was a dream move going into F1 for him. He said he couldn't let that go by. He would have feared that he would have come to regret turning it down, so he had to jump at it. But he's talked a lot about sort of soft skills and people management. I know it's something that our MotoGP correspondent Lewis Duncan, he's spoken a lot about that being a big strength of Brivio's, and he said that ultimately that they've got to remember that it's such a small team working at the track, but they've got over 1,000 people between the bases at Viri and Enstone that they're all working for, really. So he said there's sort of a lot of pressure that comes with that, but he said doesn't see any issues working with Fernando Alonso. He said all of his discussions so far have been very positive, and we also know that Davide Brivio, he'll be working alongside Marcin Bukowski, who's the executive director of the team, and there will be no set team principal at Alpine. It'll be that the two of them will sort of split duties together and jointly run the team. Bukowski explained that by having two chiefs, as it were, it means that he'll be able to afford to miss a few races towards the end of the season, something Mattia Binotto, for example, at Ferrari, he's already spoken about having to do as they sort of shift focus towards 2022. So it's maybe a little bit of a different and a bit more complicated of a sort of management structure at Alpine compared to other F1 teams, where you have one team principal and they oversee the day-to-day running. But it's a different approach. But I think they've got a really good hire in Davide Brivio. And as first impressions go, I'm pretty impressed by him.
Good. Well, we'll see how Alpine gets on in the 2021 season. Now, again, let's hear what our social media followers have made of the same questions posed about Mercedes earlier to the Alpine squad. The first question, of course, again, which driver will score more points? On Instagram, 75% said Fernando Alonso and just 25% said Esteban Ocon. Nearly identical on Twitter, 76% plumping for Alonso and 24% for Ocon. John, is that fair? Do you think Alonso is going to do better this year compared to Ocon?
Interesting. I think that might actually be quite close. I think you can't underestimate the difficulties that Fernando is going to face, A, getting back into Formula One, having been away, and you know, getting used to a new team as well. We saw it took Daniel Ricciardo 2 seasons, for example, to, you know, get up to speed with Renault when he was there. And we saw the problems Esteban Ocon had last year, coming across from having been a test driver at Mercedes and having been at Force India, just adjusting to a new car concept, new way of working. So I think it may take Fernando some time to get up to speed. I think he'll be on the pace pretty quickly, but Ocon may get a decent run at it at the start of the season before Fernando kind of finds his feet properly. So I think in the end it may be quite close. And sure, Fernando in the end, he's a wily racer. He'll extract the maximum from the car and he may get there, but I think it will be quite tight in the end between them.
Indeed. Well, the next question is, can Alpine better Renault's constructors result? I'll do that again. Well, the next question is, can Alpine better Renault's constructors result of fifth place in 2020? On Instagram, 57% of people voted yes and 43% voted no. On Twitter, just 39% voted yes and the majority, 61%, saying no. And it's a really interesting one, JBL. We discussed this in other discussions we've had at previous team launches, because when you think about it, on the face of it, we expect Ferrari to do better this year. They were certainly very sort of positive in terms of the numbers they've seen for their new engine. So you'd assume that they'll at least solve part of the problems they really encountered last year. McLaren, very successful. Aston Martin, if it hits the ground running a bit better than it did this year, should be even better in 2021. So it's a really crowded midfield. So do you think Alpine can do better than fifth? Will it struggle to get fifth? What are your thoughts on how the team will do?
I think they'll be hard-pressed to match it, I think. Obviously, last year, there were a lot of outside influences that kind of contrived to help them into fifth, I would say. But at the same time, there were outside issues that robbed them of anything higher. So it really depends on whether Aston Martin and McLaren can retain that form, if you like. I wouldn't say it's a given that Ferrari will jump ahead of them, but it does seem from the noise they're making a little bit more likely than last year. They're playing for fifth, definitely, and maybe fourth. But I think it's either between fourth and sixth, and I think it's probably going to end up being sixth at this stage. I haven't seen enough about them yet to make a concerted step forward at this stage.
Well, the next question is on sort of a similar theme. Will Alpine score more or less podiums this season than Renault managed in 2020? On Instagram, we've got 55% of people voting for more and 45% of people saying that they'll probably get less this year. Twitter, only 36% of people saying they'll get more in 2021 and 64% going for less. And again, John, it's sort of, as I said to Jake, it's a similar situation to some of the other teams that we've discussed, because if you look at Red Bull, on paper, bringing Sergio Perez in, he should be, getting the odd podiums that maybe, if a Mercedes drops out or Max Verstappen, doesn't finish. So is it going to be harder this year for a team like Alpine to get those glittering results that Ricciardo managed, and Ocon as well, in 2020?
Yeah, I think so. I know Renault had kind of a poor first half to last season, and it turned around at Spa, and then they had a really, really good spell till it fell away just at the very end of the season for them. But that midfield, is absolutely fascinating, because you could argue from any team, you can include McLaren in this, from McLaren, Aston Martin, Alpine, AlphaTauri, Ferrari, you can argue any position from third to seventh for all of them. It's pros and cons, and they could all are capable of finishing that, because it's so, so tight. And it may be that, 4 or 5 points will be the difference between one or two positions in that midfield battle. So I think it's going to be really frantic, really close, lots of ups and downs, and I think it's actually will be more difficult for teams to score, a decent run of podium finishes. So I think there'll actually be a greater share of podium finishes this year when, either of the Red Bulls or either of the Mercedes don't finish.
Well, the next question takes us back to the driver lineup. Fernando Alonso and Esteban Ocon, is that a partnership made in heaven or hell? On Instagram, it's an even split, 50% either way for heaven and hell, whereas Twitter, pretty certain that it's 62% more likely that it's hell and only 38% heaven. But it's an interesting topic, this, Luke, because particularly, let's face it, with Fernando Alonso, doesn't have you know, an unblemished history when it comes to getting on with his teammates. And also, you know, we know that he's a famously demanding character, but he's also extremely successful, and that can have a knock-on impact at the other driver squad. Look at Stoffel Vandoorne and McLaren, you know, a highly rated young driver, went up against Fernando Alonso, effectively ends up out of Formula One at the end of that. So yeah, how do you see the relationship between Alonso and Ocon going in 2021?
I think it's going to be one of the stories of the season to follow, really. And you mentioned Stoffel Vandoorne there. And in the final season that he was teammates with Fernando Alonso, Alonso defeated him 21-0 across qualifying. And I think until last year, Fernando was still trotting out that stat. He was still so proud that he'd crushed his teammate in such fashion. And I think it really depends what kind of Fernando Alonso we have coming back to F1, because we know he's determined. We know what he can do. We know how his mindset is. But I kind of liken him to Jose Mourinho, the football manager. And Mourinho sort of has this record of going into clubs, being wildly successful, and then everything falling apart. And it's kind of, then he's sort of come to his last few clubs and gone, no, that's behind me now. I'm a happy guy. Like, everything's going to be different. I'm very chill. And then it all kind of ends in a very similar fashion to what happened before. And I'm really interested what happens with Alonso here, because I think that him coming back, it's such a statement from Alpine that they don't want to look sort of at the existing talent that was in F1 or even to any of their juniors or anything like that. That they got a 39-year-old on a multi-year deal. And he's so successful and he's so good. But I'm just really interested to see how, after 2 years away, how he comes back, not only on track, but also off it. Like, what's the mentality like? So I think that's going to be interesting. But also from Esteban Ocon's side as well. I mean, he's had history of not having a great relationship with his own teammates. We saw that with Sergio Perez during that time at Racing Point. And I remember one of the final media sessions we did with Perez towards the end of their time together. And he said that he actually really regretted that his relationship with Ocon wasn't better. Because he said, yeah, there was no relationship towards the end, basically. So I think that's going to be really interesting. And I think that there's going to be a lot of maybe land grabbing early on as well. Alonso coming back, but also Ocon sort of saying, well, no, you're coming to my team. I've been here for a year. I know how things work. I want to be sort of the star of the future for Alpine. So I think it's going to be fascinating. And it could all be completely wrong. They could all like get on absolutely perfectly, have a really sort of good like older driver and youngster sort of relationship. I don't know. But yeah, looking at past history though, for both of them, you just kind of think it's got to at some point got to have some kind of flashpoint, some kind of incident that does turn things maybe a little bit sour.
Oh yeah, I mean, we certainly hope that they don't get on and have a massive falling out. That'd be far more interesting than just getting on. But the last question we asked our social media followers was, can Alpine claim a victory this season? It's a no on both counts from both Instagram and Twitter. 65% saying no on Instagram, only 35% saying yes. And again, more resounding, more negative as ever on Twitter. 79% saying no and 21% saying yes. I think that's pretty realistic and pretty accurate, to be honest, John. We did see some midfield teams scoring some victories last season, but they needed significant things to happen in those races to even get a chance of that happening. So, yeah, what do you think? Do you think Alpine can pull off what would be a shock win in 2021?
I don't think so. I think if you look at the races that the outsiders won last year in Monza, you know, Carlos Sainz was the quickest non-Mercedes effectively in that race, but was caught out by the safety car window, and Gasly, you know, had the pace there, but they weren't miles and miles adrift of Mercedes in that race. And in Sakhir, you know, Perez charged through and had the good fortune of the pit stop, but was quick on that weekend. But it was never a race where Renault was clearly the second fastest car, even those podium finishes. You know, Daniel and Esteban were well adrift of the lead cars. So I don't see them making the step up there to be super fast at the tracks where it's needed. So while I think podiums are possible, I think a win's a step too far, unless it's complete chaos and, you know, a downpour and lots of cars out and a miracle strategy, and we get a really, really shock result.
Well, thanks to John, Luke and JBL for coming on the podcast today, and of course thanks to everybody listening along. Now, just before we go, we'd like to remind you that the latest issue of Autosport magazine came out on Thursday and will be available on the supermarket shelves and in newsagents, as well as on the doormats of subscribers. There'll be a new issue of the magazine for you to pick up every Thursday, packed full of news, analysis and the usual stunning photography. And of course, if you want unlimited access to Autosport from the comfort of your home, visit autosport.com/plus to find out how to subscribe to our digital package. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Autosport Podcast. Music is 6am by Trilo, written by Marcus Simmons. See soundcloud.com/trilomusic.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Sports Social Podcast Network.